counted before, because I know that the third parak of Sukkah is popular in high schools as well, but we do it in much greater depth today. Okay, let us see the concept of mitzvah above avera. Can I fulfill mitzvah when it's a sin that enables me to do so? And it might touch on like larger philosophical issues, like do the ends justify the means? Right? Can I do a good thing based on a bad thing? It's something that any ethical system addresses. So let's see how it plays out in halakha in the case of mitzvah above avera. Yes, Zach. Yeah, sure. If anyone did not get a sheet, okay, I'm going to put it right over here. Okay, here we go. So let's start with the most famous sugya. Most famous sugya has to do with the lulav. Okay, so here we are in the third parak of Sukkah. Lulav ha-gazul v'yavesh pasul. So a lulav that's stolen or that's dried out isn't valid. Shalashera v'shalera nidachat pasul. So without getting into too much detail, we'll talk to this a little bit. What's the commonality of Asherah and Eranidaka? The lulav is somehow associated with paganism. Right, let's say this lulav was involved in pagan worship. That also invalidates it. Okay, so we've got a stolen lulav, a dried out lulav, and a pagan lulav. Okay, now the Gemara says, Kapasik v'tani loshna b'yom tov rishon, loshna b'yom tov sheni. Since the Mishnah says it in a definitive fashion, what does it sound like? When is such a lulav pasul? All of Sukkot. Okay, so whatever reason we come up with has to cover all of Sukkot. Benji Rifkin, you feeling okay?
Yes.
Okay, a heroic move out of the sick bed for Shir Chloe. Okay, it's like Willis Reed. No one's going to get the reference. But, oh, so who got the reference there?
I got it.
Oh my God, very good. Okay, look it up, guys. Willis Reed. Okay, so now, why would that be? And the Gemara's going to have a key phrase. Good phrase to get down for all the time. What does the Gemara mean every time he uses the phrase Bishlama? What's going to happen? Bishlama is always A works out and B does not. Everything is Bishalom for A but not for B. But this is very unusual Gemara. I don't know too many Gemaras that do this. There's going to be a double Bishlama. Two Bishlamas in a row. Let's see the double Bishlama. Bishlama Yavesh Hadar Binavleka Ela Gazul. What's the first Bishlama? So we understand the psul of Yavesh, we don't understand so much the psul of Gazul. Why does Gemara think that Yavesh makes sense? Why should Yavesh be Pasul? Because apparently what's one of the criteria for the four species? They should be beautiful. And dried up things are not beautiful. Where do we get that from in the Pasuk, by the way? Well, think about it. What does the Pasuk say? Ulakachtem lachem b'yom harishon. Who remembers? Creates Hadar. So if you focus on the word Hadar very much, you get, the Arba Minim are meant to be aesthetically pleasing. They're meant to be beautiful. There's a little aesthetic component to Sukkot. And if that's true, if you're dried out, you lack that. Okay, so we're good? So we know why the dried out lulav is invalid, because it lacks Hadar. It lacks that aesthetic quality. Okay, great. Do you guys want, classically, the college paper topic is aesthetics and Judaism. Does Judaism care about art at all? So when you do that, you always throw that in. Oh, here in the Sukkot, it's one of the criteria for kosher Arba Minim that it has to be Hadar. It has to be beautiful. Okay, next. Especially now that we discovered this artistic talent, Yeshiva. I only found out this morning. Okay, usually when the guys are scribbling on the sides of the Gemara pages, it's not so exciting. But look at Leo's scribbling. It's quite exciting there, guys. Check it out next morning, Zitter. Okay, you'll see there's a piece of artwork, a masterpiece on the side of the Rashba. Okay, so here we go, guys. Back to the Gemara. So we say Yavesh makes sense, but what about Gazul? But now comes the second Bishlama. Bishlama Yom Tov Rishon Tichtiv Lachem Yilashachem El B'Yom Tov Sheni Yamaylo. So what does the Gemara claim? Gazul also we understand a little bit. We understand the Psul on the first day. We don't understand the Psul so much the rest of Sukkot. Because what else does the Pasuk say besides Hadar? Lekachtem Lachem. What does Lachem indicate? You need ownership. But think about the whole pasuk. Ulakat and lachem biyom harishon. What does that seem to indicate? When is ownership a criteria? Only on day one, right? We say that in Sukkot indeed, right? You're supposed to own your Arba Minim on day one. It is not crucial whether you own them or not on day 2 through 7. So let's just sum up where we are so far. Why is Yavesh pasul all through Sukkot? Because it lacks the criteria of Hadar. Why is Gazul pasul on the first day? It's not yours. But what are we looking for now? Why is Gazul Pasul? And have you other days? So the Gemara goes on to say, Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Shum Yochai, Mishum Da'amilei Mitzvah Haba Ba'Avera. Here we go. What's the course, the source of the psalm on days 2 through 7? But there is a concept that if I do a sin to enable a mitzvah, that invalidates the mitzvah. Maybe the ends don't justify the means in Judaism. Right? You can't steal a lulav and then fulfill the mitzvah through that stolen lulav. Therefore, day 2 through 7 is pasul. Okay, so we stop right now. Yavish is pasul because of Hadar. Gazul is pasul on day Rishon because of ownership, because of Lachem. And Gazul is pasul on days 2 through 7 because of?
Mitzvah.
Okay, great. Now comes something I always like to teach guys. This is the most common misreading in the history of Judaism. Okay? This is the biggest reading mistake in Talmud Bavli. Okay? Shana Bet, you're all ineligible right now. Don't call out. Okay? Let's see if we can read this pasuk correctly. Here we go. Now, we're trying to quote a pasuk to back up the concept of mitzvah ba'avera. Let's see what pasuk we quote, and it really backs up the concept. Shenemar, what does the pasuk say? Vevetim gazul. The Navi's complaining. What's the Navi complaining about? Oh, you guys, you bring bad stuff for your karbonot. What stuff do you like to bring? Stolen items. You steal a sheep and bring them as karbonot. Okay, who could pronounce the next two words correctly? That. Oh, who just said that? I said Shenabet's ineligible. Okay, that was the whole point. Guys, every single student in the history of Judaism reads that Pesach. Okay, but there's nothing wrong with Pesach. It can't be Pesach. It is Piseach. Piseach means the animal is lame. Okay, guys, this is the classic error, the most common reading error in Jewish history. Okay, Vevetim gazul et ha-piseach v'tacholeh. Okay, what is the Navi complaint? Right, stop bringing your lame animals, right, or your sick animals. That's the problem. Okay, now which part of the pasuk is crucial for us? Of course, which is that mitzvah there kind of concept? Gazul, right? So the claim is, if the Navi is complaining, don't bring stolen animals. That indicates. It's a problem to bring stolen animals. You ever got that? So that pasuk, which is the pasuk in Malachi, might be the source for mitzvah b'avera. Now, just one thing to file away, guys. I think it's interesting when a pasuk, when you have an example, a lot of them are trying to teach a concept, and we use an example. But it's always a question, is that example just an example, or does it restrict the category? Like, let's say I say, no, Daniel Sheamus is a serious guy. So am I saying that because it's only Daniel Sheamus? Does he represent all of Canadians? Does he represent all of Shana Bet? Right? Does he represent all religious fanatics? Like, what does it represent? Right? You have to be like, what that paradigm case, what category it represents. So keep in mind, what was the source for Mitzvah Ba'avera? A stolen animal brought for our a karban. Okay, let's go next. Next Gemara. Next paragraph. Amar Yochum Shushum Meyochai. Again, Rashum Meyochai. My dechtiv, what's the passing Yeshel? Ki ani Hashem, I am God. Ohev Mishpat. I love justice. Sone Gezel Ba'ola. What do I hate? Theft regarding? What do you notice again? We've got another passing against stolen items. Once again, what's the context? Karban. It's hard not to notice that both psukim we've cited, both from Micha and from Yeshayahu, are actually about karbanot. Okay, good. Now, let's skip a little bit further down to the end of the Gemara, and we'll finish our survey of this Gemara. Okay, you see what it says, Pliga to Rav Yitzchak, towards the end? Now, at this point in time, everyone seems to agree that Mitzvah Ba'avera would create a problem on day 2 through 7, and we have two different sources for it. Okay, great. Here we go. Isaac Rosen, you're doing well? Isaac Rosen has totally shifted the gears here, guys. Okay, all of a sudden he wears this like a button-down shirt every day. He's giving up the breastless kippah.
Yeah.
He's gone from breastless Syrian to respectable yeshiva guy look. I don't know what happened. Okay, what?
It's not
your
citizen.
Wait, Isaac, I have one left question left for you. Do they still recognize you at Chatzer?
No, they don't.
They want to know who the new guy is who's going to Chatzer every day. What happened to the breastless guy? Okay, so here we go. Okay, don't worry, Harry. We know you're there also. Okay. Okay, so let's go to the end here. Okay, they've named the dish after Harry. You can order the Harry. Okay, here we go. Pliga to Rav Yitzchak. What's Pliga? It's argues Rav Yitzchak. The Amr Yitzchak bar Nachmeni Amr Shmuel. Now we're going to call this the Shmuel position because it's Rav Yitzchak quoting Shmuel. What does Shmuel think? Lo shano b'yom tov rishon. Avo b'yom tov sheni mitok sheyotzei b'sha'ul yotzei nami b'gazul. That's going to be an important position. What does Shmuel apparently think? That on days 2 through 7, you can use a bar lulav and even
stolen
lulav. So now let me raise a question for you guys. What is the logic of Shmuel? Right? If, let's say a lot of us will intuitively like the concept of mitzvah by the way. It doesn't seem to make sense. You'd be allowed to steal to do a mitzvah. The ends don't justify the means. So why does Shmuel reject that? Does Shmuel think there's no concept whatsoever of mitzvah by the way? Why does Shmuel think it's okay to use a stolen lulav on day three? Moshe, what do you think? Okay, interesting. So you want to say maybe the theft is not so bad? Okay, yeah?
I mean, I think there's two possibilities. One could be that he's saying maybe he's inferring that it's a shogeg.
Where'd you get shogeg from? Just curious?
And then he doesn't, like that the person doesn't know.
Okay, but that you inserted that, the Gemara didn't say it was a shogeg case, right?
No.
Okay, what's your second possibility?
The second possibility would be that, like, one, you know, you did the Avera, but you did the Avera because want to do a mitzvah, so
So Eli Jarosz should make a big philosophical move here. Like, maybe Judaism does not always say the end is not justified means. Maybe sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. In fact, we'll do a little ethical philosophy tangent for 1 second. Okay, one day you guys will be in college. Hopefully some of you will not be in business school. Okay, and you might take a ethical philosophy class, and they'll say there's the following split. Right, you could be a consequentialist, or you could be a Kantian. What will the consequentialist say? How do you evaluate the worth of an action? By what consequences it produces. So even if you're doing something wrong, that would be okay as long as it produces good results. But what would the Kantian say? No, we judge actions based on whether right or wrong. We do not look at the results as a way of justifying actions. That is one of the most fundamental debates you could possibly have in ethical philosophy. So maybe, here we go, right here, Eli Jarosz is suggesting that...
I'm saying that might be...
It's okay, don't worry. I'm not giving an ethical position here, Eli. Eli said maybe Shmuel is a consequentialist. So, and Rosh Hashanah Yochai is a Kantian. So Rosh Hashanah Yochai says, how could you justify a mitzvah based on theft? It's got to be a problem. And Shmuel says, okay, so it's theft, but you end up doing a mitzvah. The ends justify the means. Yeah.
I don't think you noted in the Gemara, but isn't it possible that the reason you can't... Not because of
the Mitzvah
of
Avera,
because when you steal something, you still have a
clear
of that is far ownership anyway, so you would be considered the owner.
Ah, correct. No, 1 second, hang in there, guys. What does... Even Shmuel thinks you're not Yotzi on day one. Why does Shmuel agree you're not Yotzi on day one, guys? Because you need ownership, exactly that point. Shmuel's only argument is 2 through 7. Okay. Yeah, John Seidel.
Isn't there an idea that you can steal someone's talent if they want you to do the mitzvah?
Okay, except... that's right. Here's where language really matters. You're not stealing someone's fun. You are borrowing someone's fun. Now, it's true. Let me just clarify your point 1 second. For that, by the way, I just want to back home, guys. Nice alumni in the back, Yossi Berendt. Yossi, I can even come in my dim to create more drama. Okay. Not coming from Kuzlars. Okay. In any case, yes, he's so humble. He did not come in his uniform just to look cool. He came in just in a t-shirt. Okay. Again, yes, I will point out violating the dress code, Jesse. But okay. Okay. It's okay. So, one thing, guys. So, let me just clarify. Yes, are you wearing socks? Okay. Okay. So, you know, guys, I'll tell you what. Here's a good deal. If you become a chayal and you visit Yeshiva in your spare time, you don't have to keep the dress code. It's okay. Okay, here we go. So, I don't know if it's worth it for that reason, but it's okay. Let me just clarify John Seidel's point, guys. There's a concept called Shoel Shalom Midat. What would it mean, Shoel Shalom Midat? You borrow some without permission. Now, in some cases, that could be theft, right? If Jakey Zakai really is very attached to his hockey stick, he's very nervous that if you use it, it might break. So indeed, Shoel Shalom Midat would be an act of theft. But there might be circumstances in our lives where, what are you allowed to assume? The owner is quite happy to use it. Arguably, a sitter does not act like that. Like, let's say I walk in and there's no sidur and I want to daven mincha. Maybe I'm allowed to assume Ilan Cohen would not have a problem if I use his sidur for mincha. Right? So that would be, again, so I think, John, you weren't fair because you said steal. If we assume that a person does want to use the tefillin, it's not an act of theft. It's an act of legitimate borrowing.
You also say, I mean, I'm betting more than in the borrowing category, but also, like, since it is also something that's temporary, like, after, you know, the end of Sukkot, you're not going to use it anymore. Even more so, so it would be like, you know, if you really want to use, so if you get the mitzvah, you're not going to need it. Like, it's like, because the whole point that you, sometimes you can't use someone else's thing because it means so much more to them and they, you know, they want to be damaged.
Okay.
But like, Sukkot is like a, you know, lulav is so temporary for that, you know.
No, okay.
Okay. Like, I think even more so someone would be okay with you using a lulav, like their own lulav.
But you're saying, what if I even, what if I don't intend to give it back? I'm really stealing it.
Like,
right, so I think that's
real. Like someone steals on the film.
Yeah, but again, but I think the classic case of Gazul is not a case of Shor Shol Midah. It's Gazul means Gazul. Shmuel.
I mean, you could also say, as in, like, when you're using it, like, there's no practical difference between, like, borrowing and stuff like that. And, like, when you're in the act of using it.
There is a practical difference, whether I'm going to give it back or not.
No, I know, but in the act of doing it, like, meaning, the same action, whether I take it in the love, and then use it, and then theoretically afterwards, I'm either giving it back to keep it. But, like, in that moment, there's no, like.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Not bad. Yeah.
So, throwing the assumption that it's something that the person would have wanted to use, would have much used, and you steal someone's palm frond from their palm tree, that's not very stolen.
Let's leave aside the shoal case for now. Okay? Danny, you want to say something?
I was thinking for a second, the only real reason to steal luck is to do a mitzvah. So, like,
and therefore?
And I don't know, and therefore, like, am I justified in the sense that, like, you know.
Why does that make the theft better?
Right, so I'm saying, but like, normally, let's say I steal, I
here we go. So we're now going to go through three or four interpretations of Shmuel. Okay, so just to sum up where we are, we have a general concept of mitzvah ba'avera, and we have the Shmuel position that it does not apply on days 2 through 7. We have one way to take Shmuel, like Ellie says, maybe Shmuel does not hold the mitzvah ba'avera at all. What's the alternative, of course? He does agree there's a concept called mitzvah ba'avera. He just thinks it doesn't apply somehow to this case. Here we go, guys. Four theories. Let us start with Tosafot. We'll skip the two for a second, go to three. We'll come back to two. Okay, first pshat in Shmuel says Tosafot. Mitoch sheyotzei b'shol yotzei b'gazul. Hacha davka shehu midrabanan. Lo chayesh ha-mitzvah ba'avera. Okay, not some exciting pshat qualitatively. It's more quantitative. What does Tosafot say? Well, on days 2 through 7, what mitzvah are you fulfilling?
Lulav.
A rabbinic mitzvah? Yeah. But apparently, when is lulav deraita? It's only deraita on. Remember? Ulakachtem lachem b'yom harishon. What often happens in halacha when you go from deraita to the rabbanan? Things get
less
strict. So again, I realize it's a little bit of a quantitative svara, but maybe that's the way it works. When do you have to worry about mitzvah ba'avera? On a deraita plane. On a derabbanan plane, you don't have to worry about it. Okay, that's theory one. Okay, not such an exciting svara, but a svara. Okay, I'll get to you in a second, Gabe. Let's go to Lekach Tov. Lekach Tov is a very interesting achron. His name is Rav Yosef Engel. He has all kinds of interesting svaro. Here is a particularly intriguing one. Let's see what Rav Yosef Engel has to say. Source 4, Venir Lamiyotati, the Bedaber Shu Zecher Lamigdash. A little bit of background, guys. I just said that the right to mitzvah is one day. It's not 100% true. What's actually true about the Arba Minim, guys? There's a mitzvah to take the lulav for one day outside the Mikdash, and there's a mitzvah to take it for 7 days in the Mikdash. Just to give you two psukim, one pasuk says, Ulakachtem lachem v'yom harishon, and the other pasuk says, Usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem shivat yamim. What's the difference between two psukim? What phrase did the second one have? Lifnei Hashem. So what do we derive from there? Lifnei Hashem, it's 7 days. Outside of Lifnei Hashem, it is 1 day. Why do we today take it days 2 through 7? What are we doing? A classic act of Zeichel Mikdash. We're trying to remember the Mikdash. Okay, Elon, you doing okay there? You look a little tired. What's wrong? All those Australian jokes getting you down? How many times did you hear the word barbecue this week?
Too many.
Okay, here, guys. Guys, no more barbecue jokes to Elon, okay? What else do people, what are the Australian references that people make? How many kangaroo references have you heard? Okay, guys, that's it. No barbecue or kangaroo references anymore. Okay, Outback? How's the Outback doing? Okay, here we go. Guys, you got to be more subtle in your Australian references. Why do you make fun of Australian history? Like, ask Elon, like, how many famous things have happened in Australian history? Okay, go with that. Right? You jacked me for sure. What? Okay. Can we just think exhaust all the famous Australian actors and actresses? Is that it? I don't know how you got that.
Oprah
Winfrey's just
the house. The house.
Okay. In any case. Okay, go back here, guys. So let's see what the Lechem Tov has to say. So he says, what are we doing in days 2 through 7? What are we doing? We're doing act of Zecher, but not just Drabban, more specifically, Zecher Lemigdash. Here comes the Kisvara. Lo Shaykh Psul, Rakinu Psul Hanikar Beguf Hadavar. What's Psul Hanikar Beguf Hadavar? What's Nikar? Ah, it has to be a Psul that you can see. Now, this is a little bit of a creative, so what do you want to claim? Well, I'm making a loop day 2 through 7 to remind people or to commemorate what happened in the Gush. He says, when you ever have a Zeichel Mikdash, what's crucial now? It should have the right look. It should look like it looked in the Mikdash. Now, that's an interesting idea. What would emerge? What psulim would apply? What psulim would not apply? So only psulim that are physically apparent. Antwoof just nailed it. According to this, why would Yavesh apply? Well, if you have a dried out lulav, what will emerge? When the audience sees that, it doesn't look like it looked in the Mikdash. But what will happen all of a sudden? This is terrible for those who like abstract things. Only physical psulim will apply. Which psulim won't apply? Any abstract psulim will not apply. What about mitzvah above there, guys? Which category should it be in? It's not physical, right? You look at a stolen lulav, it looks the same as every other lulav in the world. It's an abstract psul. And according to Lechach Tov, we don't apply abstract psulim to this because it's, again, but what kind of category? Because it's zecher. Again, the subject in zecher and mikdash categories, we only care about appearance. Okay, so we've got two svaras on the board. No comments yet. What are the two svaras on the board for Shmuel? Either Shmuel thinks it doesn't apply because it's the Rabbanan, or Shmuel thinks it doesn't apply because it's Zeich LeMikdash. Okay, guys, after I get 4 svaras, I'll take comments. Now, is there any source for this in Halakha? Any source for this idea that in Zeich LeMikdash categories, we could forego abstract psul? This is a very interesting one interesting source in the Ran. Let's talk about this for 1 second, guys. Look at the Ran in source 5. The Efshek Shammah Rav Zal Karach Matzumar Mehi the Lo Mitra. Okay, if you guys get this, you really make my day, because we actually had it in last year, Chloe. Okay, what is the word mitra mean? Who remembers what the word natar means?
Guardian.
Ah, Zach, excellent. Okay, there it is. Okay, the Cleveland Browns come through. Okay, natar, remember like who remembers why the Detroit Carta called the Detroit Carta? What do they claim? We are guarding the city. Natar is shamar. Okay, if you get this, guys, you really make my whole week. Which pasuk had that verb even though the nun gets dropped? Oh, go for it. Remember, guys, what does lo tikom velo titor mean? Don't take vengeance or bear a grudge. But hold is a good translation here. Why lo titor? Because you are guarding the grudge, right? Natar. Okay, excellent. So what would, if you're in the matzah, guys, if you're in a matzah context and use the phrase lo mintra, what would that mean? It's not shamar. Does that ring the bell? How about the phrase matzah shmura? Was it guarded? Apparently he's quoting an earlier Rav, the Riv, who said the matzah doesn't need to be shmura. Why in Korach? Why does it have to be shmura? Now that actually is a good source for the Lechach Tov. What's the Rav claiming? If I'm only eating matzah for Zeich LeMikdash, what will I care about? It has to look like matzah. Will non-shmura matzah look the same as shmura matzah? Of course, you can't tell by appearance whether it's shmur or not. So when I'm doing the non, I'm not doing the mitzvah matzah per se, when I'm just doing zeich lemikdash. Right, let me clarify, guys. Maybe I should have clarified this first. We eat matzah multiple times over the Seder night, right? One is the mitzvah matzah, one is korach. Which one is zeich lemikdash? The matzah or the korach? What do we say explicitly, actually? Zeich, oh, very good. Janky. Excellent. That was you, right? Zechel mikdash kelo. So what does he claim? When I'm doing the mitzvah matzah, I need to do matzah shmura. When I'm doing korech, which is just zechel mikdash, it need not be matzah shmura because it'll have the right look. So again, guys, that is another source for Okay, last far, then I'll take questions. Everyone go back to the previous page, please. Okay, to source number two. Back to source number two. Okay, this is an important Tosfot. Mishum de'avale mitzvah ba'avera. De'afal gab de'kra garbi karban k'tiv. Now, sometimes, guys, you can learn a lot from something that's rejected. And maybe something that's rejected is going to come back to haunt you later. What was Tosfos thinking? Maybe I should restrict mitzvah ba'avera to karbanot. After all, both psukim were about karbanot. But it would seem if I restrict it to the sacrificial order, it would not apply to lulav, right? So look what he says. Hu adin b'chol mitzvot, havi d'oraita. So even though in theory I could restrict it, what's the end of the day? I don't take the category in a limited fashion. Karbanot was just an example. It's an example for the whole world of mitzvot. Everyone got that? Okay, but let's go back and see where we could use a rejected svar. Perhaps now, guys, one might be a good shot in Shmuel. Why does Shmuel think the stone lulav is okay? Give me a third alternative now. What if Shmuel thinks that we restrict mitzvah b'avera to karbanot? After all the psukim were about karbanot, maybe he says, okay, it's a great concept, it's very limited. It's only for the sacrificial order. Okay, so let's just see what we have right now, guys. Now I'm going to take comments, then I'll give you a good rule for all of Shalal in 1 second. But four theories of Shmuel. Okay, Yakiva knows what's coming. Okay, Shmuel says you could use a stone lulav. Why is that, guys? Here we go. Most radical theory. Shmuel thinks there's no concept of mitzvah b'avera. Shmuel is a classic consequentialist. He's like John Stuart Mill. He's not like Immanuel Kant. Right? Mitzvah b'avera is okay. Well, it's not mutter, but you're yotze. Okay. Shot two. It is much more limited. Right? I am only allowed to do a mitzvah b'avera. What did Tosfos would say? If the mitzvah in question is Rabbanan. The right is when there's a problem, I'm leaning to the Rabbanan. Theory three of the Lekach Tov, it's not okay for every Rabbanan, it's only okay for what kind of mitzvot? Zeich LeMikdash. What's the Lekach Tov Svara? What do I care about in Zeich LeMikdash? It should look right. That's all I care about. So abstract psulim did not apply. Fourth theory now that we just developed, based on the Tosfos rejection, maybe he thinks the mitzvah of Meir is limited to the world of Carbon. Okay, so we have four nice theories for Shmuel. Okay, now who had to come for it? Not allowed. Gabe Gross.
So in regards to source number three, they say if it's quantifying the mitzvah aspect, but it can also quantify the avera aspect to say, like,
oh, that was very clever. Say maybe it should matter it's an avera to right to an avera to a button.
Yeah.
Very clever, Gabe. You're gonna be a lump in one day. Okay. Yeah, it's a very clever question. I'm just looking forward to it. Yeah. Daniel.
So does that mean you're also allowed to use an shera throughout the week, or is that more complicated?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Except for you made a huge assumption. You're assuming that Ashera is also a problem of mitzvah b'avera. That's about to be debated. We'll debate that in 5 minutes. Noah Maimon.
Shmuel said that, does he agree that you need to have worship then to?
Yes, again. When does Shmuel say that a stone lulav is kosher? On days 2 through 7. Everyone agrees day one is a problem. But day one is not a problem because of mitzvah b'avera. Why is day one a problem? Because you need ownership.
So he's saying it's not.
Well, we're debating exactly, the four pshatim are debating precisely what Shmuel thinks. Does Shmuel totally reject the concept of mitzvah b'avera? Or does Shmuel think that mitzvah b'avera is limited to certain contexts, limited to d'oraita, limited to non-zeich l'migdash, limited to karbanot, etc. Okay, anybody else with a comment or question we've done so far? Yeah, Ellie.
Yeah, the general mitzvah b'avera, it's not like a plus one, it cancels out because you did the avera, then you did the mitzvah, so it's not like a plus one, then a minus one. The reason you do a mitzvah is because it's, the moral, ethical thing to do.
Okay.
So how does, I don't understand, how would God judge that? It doesn't seem to be,
Look, it is a reasonable question, but I think we could leave the divine accounting aside for now. Okay?
Yeah.
We're good? Okay, guys, here we go. There are good rules for life for shout-out, guys. Okay, we all know we're trying to have a very productive year here, but there are things that get in the way. There are various distractions. Okay, so I've coined a rule that there are four things that tend to distract the righteous guys from Talmud Torah. Okay, here are the four things, guys. One is having a girlfriend. Okay, one is being a Zionist. I'll explain all four. One is Tchelet, and one is being a Yom Chassid. Okay, those are the four things that can get in the way of Talmud Torah. Okay, I'll now explain why all four things can get in the way. Okay? Well, girlfriend's pretty obvious, right? If you have to run to see her during dinner, and you come back late for night dinner, so it just takes time. Now, this doesn't take time, but it's like emotionally draining sometimes. Like, what if she breaks up with you? Okay, what if you're trying to figure out whether to break up with her? Right, so you spend all night there thinking about should you break up with her or not? So that's just a distraction. Okay, so that's number one, right? So girlfriends is a distraction. Okay, tchelet. So I'm not really sure why, but every year in Oraita, there's like this fascination with should I be wearing tchelet or not? So it becomes like a 3-month conversation. Right? Should I get tchelet? Should I put on all my pairs of tzitzit? What about when I'm the chazan? Then that becomes somehow the only conversation. What the fuck is on? Okay, so that's why tchelet is a distraction. Okay, so we got girlfriends and tchelet. Okay, Zion is a distraction because let's say you decide you want to go to the army. Right, so then you spend endless time in bureaucratic offices talking to Nefesh B'Nefesh, talking to the army. You check out some Israeli yeshiva. Right, the next thing you know, you lost like 2 months of your time. Okay, so that's the distraction of Zionism. And neo-Hasidic, because you become like Jeremy Seidel, you just run Hasidus all day. Like that becomes your I should explain what neo-Hasidus is. But before I explain this, I'll just say one thing funny. So guys, if you want to know whether you're going to have a productive year or not, you could all like count how many of those 4 boxes you check. Right, are you going to be distracted by the girlfriend, by tchelet, by Zionism, or by neo-Hasidut? But one of the things I find most humorous about yeshiva is one of the strongest guys we ever had is a guy named Jake Kaufman. Okay, from Hefter, and he actually went 4 for 4, and he still had a very good year. So my rule was great. Somehow Jake Kaplan like ruined the rule, but he actually ended up marrying her, so it was great. Okay, but in any case, you could think about how many of your 4 exactly. You're definitely Zion is definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, smiley guy.
It's not tomorrow.
Okay, so let me just explain what... Guys, let me explain one more thing. We're going to go back to Shirkalia. We'll also explain... Some of you might wonder, what is the difference between Hasidut and Neo-Hasidut? So let me explain that for 1 second. Okay? A very interesting phenomenon has occurred in the last 20 years in our community, both in Israel and in America, which is the modern Orthodox and the Dati Lumi world about 20 years ago, nobody was interested in Hasidut. It was not a player at all. And somehow it's become something that people are very interested in. I'll even give you a good proof. Right. Let us say you looked at the electives in yeshiva high schools 25 years ago. Frisch did not have a Hasidut elective. Right. SAR did not have a Hasidut elective. Fuchs. Okay. But Fuchs Mizrahi still does not have a Hasidut elective. Okay. But correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Is there anybody who has any like sympathy for Hasidut on staff? Okay. There you go. But to be fair to Fuchs Mizrahi, it is a smaller school. Okay, so, but you'd go today to Frisch, and Lola Omiold as a senior, you're trying to figure out what elective to sign up, and Rabbi Bashis is giving an elective in Chassidut, right, there it is. Right, you go to SAR, and the bastion of modern orthodoxy, and there you go, Rabbi Bashis giving a Chassidut class. Okay, I would like to suggest if you looked at the list from 25 years ago, that was not happening. Okay, and one more example, guys. Let us say, who here lives in Englewood? There are a bunch of guys from Englewood? That's it? Oh, very good. Okay, let's say, what do you guys, Allison, what are you guys talking? What are you talking about? Okay, let's say you go around Englewood. You are in the heart of modern orthodoxy. But then you find your way to Rabbi Reichman Shul, and you say, oh, Rabbi Reichman, what do you do in your spare time? What do you do in your spare time? What do you write books about? What will you discover? What's writing books about? Chassidut, right? Tanya, he wrote another Chassidut book also, I don't remember what it is. Right, so it has clearly become... So what do I mean by neo-Hasidut? Okay, guys, it's good for understanding the community. Okay, so something very interesting has happened. If you're really a Hasid, what does that mean? Like, you've joined a team, as it were. You're part of a social group. Like, let's say I am a real Ger Hasid. That means I keep all the Ger Hasidic practices. Right, I've joined a team. But what does it mean to be a neo-Hasid? It's not that I identify with a particular Hasidic group, but there's certain things I like about Hasidut that I could take in and assimilate. So it might mean I like Karbach Kabbalah Shabbats, right? That's what I like about Hasidut. I might like learning Likutei Moran in my spare time. Okay, but it doesn't mean that I identify myself as a Breslov Hasid. So I'm going to say that in some ways it's the best of both worlds, because you get to take what you like of Hasidut without, you know, having to take the entire package. Like, I am not a Hasid of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, but I will enjoy learning the Tanya. Okay, we got that? So now we all know what neo-Hasidut is, file that away. It's kind of very interesting why it started to make inroads in our community, which it did, wasn't true 30 years ago. And again, just remember, guys, the 4 things to distract you from Talmud Torah are, again, girlfriends, tchelet, Zionism, and Yochasim. So just check yourself how you do on that list of 4. Yes, I keep believing. What? Ideology. Ideology, but not that? What's that? Okay, so Akiva Levi says, it is cheap and easy to be a new chassid. You're taking the ideology, but not really signing up. Okay, we'll debate that some other time.
Well, yeah, choose. Yeah.
Do I consider what?
Do you consider being like
Look, obviously I'm kidding. Obviously it is Talmud Torah. I would make a birka to Torah on Rav Nachman Sir. Okay? But it could still be a distraction, right? It could say, I might be Jeremy Seidel as I'm going to Ksubas in the middle of the morning Seder. Like a little voice is nagging at me. I should be literally Kutum right now. What am I doing here in Ksubas? Right? So it could be a distraction. Okay? Okay? We're good? Everybody got that down? Okay, great. Okay, let's go back to... Yeah, no.
I
want to
ask a question about
Shirley. Yeah. Right, so radical move there, Noah. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, no, it's okay. No, my boy, you don't have to be embarrassed. Go ahead, Noah. All right,
so... My question... Could there be a fifth option?
Yeah, what's your option?
Is that... when if it's stolen, the person... like, when you steal an object... you have a clear view back, right?
Yes.
Right, so that's perhaps what Shmuel expressed is that he doesn't own it at all. Like, the Chiyav is barring him from ownership, so he can't use it because it would be Yotzei Yehovah anyways because he doesn't own it at all. Like, he has been stolen.
Okay, but the Chiddush of Shmuel is that I am Yotzei on day 2 through 7. We're looking for a theory for that. Why is it not a problem of Mitzvah B'Aveira on day 2 through 7? Okay, I think you're caught up on day 1 in ownership. Okay, Zach, well.
Are there any monetary ramifications for borrowing it or stealing it? Meaning, like, can the person charge you? Like, if they find out you borrowed it.
Yeah, like, well, once you steal something, you have a chiv to pay back, right? Yeah.
Is there a difference in availability?
Look, let me clarify one thing, guys. I was a little bit unfair. Okay, by the way, Jack, I'm telling you about it. Did you walk out for 5 minutes? You can never tell me you missed a good thing. You missed a great one. Okay? Okay, so in any case, the... what did I... wait, Yoni, what did I want to say just now? Is that... right, what did you ask about again, Yoni? When I said the consequentialist position with Eli Joshua and John Stuart Mill, that wasn't really fair. Because if I really think the ends justify the means, what am I saying? I could l'charchila steal the lulav for the mitzvah. I don't think anyone's saying that. What are we saying over here? I shouldn't steal the lulav for the mitzvah, but if I do so, I'm yotzei. Right, so you're right. I pushed, because I want to speak the ethical philosophy tangent in there. Okay, but the truth is, no one is taking a position that it's okay to steal for that purpose. But it might be, once I've stolen it, I could do the mitzvah with it. Okay, we're good? All right, let us go back to source 2, because now we're going to leave Shmuel aside and go back to the mainstream position. Again, what's the mainstream position? That even on day 2 through 7, I'm not yotzi because of mitzvah haba by there. Okay, now here's the key question, guys. What relationship do I need between the Aveir and the Mitzvah for it to be a Mitzvah above Aveir? So look at source 2. Look what he says in the Yesh Lomar. See, he wants to know how come... let's go back to Daniel Shamus' point. Why is the Asherah possible? The rule of Shal Asherah. So guess what? The Gemara gives a reason, and the reason is not Mitzvah above Aveir. It's something called Ketute Mechtachurim. Since I only have 19 minutes left, I'm not going to get into what it means. But the key thing for us is, the Gemara's rationale is not mitzvah ba'aveira. So what emerges? A stolen lulav is a problem of mitzvah ba'aveira. A pagan lulav is not a problem of mitzvah ba'aveira. Can anyone tell me just from Svara, or maybe you saw it in Tosfot, why would the friendship between the two? What makes the stolen one more mitzvah ba'aveira than the pagan one? Okay? Dan Chanis, what do you say? That
stolen one, you stole it and then you used it, but the
Asherah,
the act of using it, is the
Isser. Okay. So I think you're getting at what Tosfot says. Let's go to Tosfot. So says Tosfot, you see the fifth line, guys, the Yeshlomar? Yeshlomar, the lo dami legezel. Why is it Asherah not like theft? The machmat avirat hagezel ba mitzvah. What does machmat mean? What? Because of, as a result of. Guys, what does Tosfot say? What's the Tosfot's theory of mitzvah ba avirah? That's only when the Aveira enables the mitzvah. I would say it's the causality theory. What's true about an Asherah? It's true, I'm not supposed to engage in pagan worship. But the pagan worship of this lulav in no way enabled or caused the mitzvah. Haven't seen that? There's a causality that's needed. And it would make sense. If there's a causality that's needed, what's usually going to be the case of mitzvah by Aveira? Theft. Theft will be the classic case where The Aveira is what? Enables the mitzvah. Not an accident that theft keeps coming up again and again. Again, so theory one on the board. What is the relation between the Aveira and the mitzvah? In a mitzvah above scenario, causality. It's only when the Aveira causes slash enables the mitzvah. Okay, we're good so far? Why does it not apply to an Asherah retreat? Even though it was involved in pagan worship. Because the pagan worship plays no causal role in the mitzvah. If on Sunday I worship the tree, I worship with the tree, and on Monday I use the lulav, there's no causality. There's no causal connection. Everybody so far? Okay? We're great? Okay, excellent. Now, let us turn the page and go to an interesting Rambam. Did I put the Rambam? Oh, here we go. Source 6. Okay, let's look at the Aruch Haner. I don't know why I quoted from the Aruch Haner, because really I want the Rambam. Okay, Divrei HaRambam. The Perish HaMishnah, right guys? The Rambam did not write a commentary on the Gemara, but he did write a commentary on the Mishnah. What does he say? Shekata v'zeh l'sher mitzvah b'avera ena mitzvah v'lefikach lulav ha-gazov v'shel ashera v'shel ir nidachat pasul. Wild Rambam. What did the Rambam just do, guys? He applied the concept of mitzvah b'avera even to ashera. Clearly the Rambam cannot be a believer in the causal theory. Can anyone give me a different theory then? What else? How else might I define mitzvah baba vera? Why might I negate the Asherah tree? Okay, what's wrong? Yeah, Gabe?
Because it wouldn't have happened without the Avera aspect to it. Like,
why is that true? They're two totally separate facts. I worshipped on Monday and I took a lulav on Tuesday.
Because the Avodah Zarah like changed the status of the
lulav. I'm going to rephrase Gabe's point. Good, Gabe? I will call it the tainted object theory of mitzvah baba vera. Why might I not want to use something that was an Asherah tree? Well, when I use an object in a certain way, maybe that gives it a certain negative association. And you wouldn't want that negative association for something else. Like, let's say, that's actually a quote of pasuk. Let's say I have an animal, not excuse me, somebody else. Somebody else has an animal that they use to pay a prostitute for her wages. Okay, now she has the animal. Then she says, I'd like to bring it as a karbon. What might we say at that point? No, because it's tainted. It's a tainted item, and therefore it's not appropriate for a karban. So what if I think of mitzvah baba avera that way? Right, we got that? So now I think we've got two theories about mitzvah baba avera. Theory one, you need a causal connection. It's only when the avera enables the mitzvah. What would I say? What would be the ramifications? A stolen lulav is a problem, but an asher lulav is not a problem. That's Tosfos. What would the Rambam say? I've got the tainted object theory. I don't need causality. So when I have an Asherah tree, it's tainted. I don't want a tainted item to be used for a mitzvah, and then it would apply both to Gazul and to Asherah. Okay, where did I end up before? Daniel Shanus. What, in my prostitute case?
Yeah.
Yeah, but think about the world of associations, Daniel. The world of association means your mind makes a connection. Right? That doesn't have to be logical or rational. That's just the nature of humanity. If you have an item that was used to pay a prostitute, you associate that with a prostitute. Okay, that's the nature of the associative mind. Okay, I think you're a little too mathematical about life, Daniel. Get out of your little math box. Okay, think associatively for a second. Go take a literature course. It'll be okay. All right? Anybody else with a comment or question? We're all good? Okay, let us deal with one last thing. Okay, the last thing is as follows. Let's go to source 8. We'll ask one last question. We've got 14 minutes left, and we'll wrap it up. Okay, let's see if we'll get Mashu. Yeah. Keep waving. Now you're excited. What a day for you. Okay. Okay, you're absolutely right. Okay, you guys are all aware that there's a... I'll just explain this for 2 seconds. Everyone should be a knowledgeable Jew. Okay, you know that in the world of yeshiva, there was a new method of analysis called the Brisker Derech. You all heard of it? Okay, so that was invented at the end of the 1800s. Who's usually associated as the founder of the Brisker Derech? Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, very good. Okay, not to be confused with the other famous Reb Chaim in the 1800s. Who is the other famous Reb Chaim in the 1800s? No, guys. We just pulled that out. Who was that? Oh no, now he has to hide in shame. Okay. Guys, there are three terms which go together. There's Reb Chaim Volozhin. There's Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and there's Reb Chaim of Brisk. Okay, Reb Chaim of Brisk is the same as Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Reb Chaim Volozhin was not in Brisk. He was in Volozhin. Okay? Now, what's a little bit confusing, so it'll make life a little interesting, at one point in his life, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik taught at Voloshin. So that's what makes it confusing. But which one started the yeshiva? Reb Chaim Voloshin. Just two more interesting tangents about him, guys. Do a good Jewish history tangent here. Who was he a student of? Reb Chaim Voloshin? Very good. The Vilna Gaon, the Gra. Excellent. Last tangent. Okay, this is especially for the capitalists in the room. Okay, what sefer did he write, Reb Chaim Voloshin? A famous sefer called Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim is a critique, not all of it, but who does it critique? Chassidim. Okay, you guys may be aware, the most famous opponent of the Chassidim was the Gra. You guys aware of this? And the Gra's major student was Reb Chaim Voloshin. So his work in Nefesh HaChaim is to some degree, there's a section that's a critique of Chassidim. Okay, very interesting section. But here's the fascinating thing, is where guys, you have to realize that life is complex. What would most of us associate in our minds, if you have the Chassidim, the Misnagdim, who's learning Kabbalah? The Chassidim are into Kabbalah and the Misnagdim are not. That would be the standard assumption if you're not a complex thinker. You have this simplistic black and white portrait of the world. What happens if you actually open the Nefesh HaChaim, what you discover? It is full of Kabbalah. So what is it, believe it or not, guys? It is all the Kabbalistic reasons you should be a Misnagdim, not a Chassid. Like maybe you could argue on Kabbalistic grounds. What if I say that according to Kabbalah, Talmud Torah is the most important mitzvah? Right? And really, we should also be learning Baba Basra all day. Right? So you're saying, what are you doing now? Oh, I'll quote the Zohar to tell you why I should be learning Ksuvos and Arav Nachman. Right? Based on the Zohar. Okay, there it is. Okay, so if you ever open Nefesh HaChaim, okay, did you know that? Nefesh HaChaim is a Kabbalistic defense of being a Misnagdim. Okay, quite interesting. Okay, so that is Reb Chaim Voloshin. So that's not what we're talking about now. Now we're talking about Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the founder of the Brisker Derech. Okay, I'm not going to explain right now because I did too many tangents already today. I'm running out of time. But Reb Chaim, the most famous category, let me say one more thing, guys. Often when I start a new approach, suddenly a new approach is not just about ideas, it might even be just about terminology. Because terminology reflects ideas. So which terminology did I come up with? So the classic terminology split in Brisker Derech is to differentiate between Chefetz and Gavra. Is it about the object or about the person? Okay, so Yishai, I wanted to apply that to this. If I say the tainted object theory, it is a din in the Chefetzah. Right, the Chefetzah is problematic. If I say the causality theory, it's more about the Gavra. Okay, so if you're a Kiva Levi, you're like a wild brisker, and you want to sneak in Chefetzah Gavra whenever possible, you can now sneak in here to the Rambam verse Tosfot. Okay, last part of the shir, guys, last part. Let's go to Source 7. Source 7 is not about Lulav, it's about Sukkah. What does it say? Why does it say lecha? Lim'ute gezula. What does lim'ute mean? Ah, notice what's happened. We have a special pasuk to exclude. You can't be yotze with a stolen sukkah. If I steal your sukkah, like your sukkah's in your backyard, next day you wake up, it's in my backyard, I cannot fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah with that. Now, everyone has the same question. What do we have here for a sukkah? We have a special pasuk. We shouldn't need a special pasuk. Why shouldn't we need special pasuk, guys? What should we be able to plug in easily? It's possible because of... We already have a general topic called mitzvah b'avera. Why don't we just plug it in and not need a pasuk? So that's the last question we're going to deal with. Why would we need a special pasuk for our sukkah tzua? Once again, guys, in theory there could be four answers. Okay, let us go to Tosfos in Source 8. What does Tosfos say? V'yesh lamar, the time of the mitzvah era, lav doraita, el midrabanan. What's the claim? It's not exactly like the previous Tosfot. Don't be misled. It's a different derivative of the Rabbanan split. Mitzvah b'avera is a psul, but on what level did that psul originate? The rabbis originated the psul. Now here, one quick point, guys. I can't just throw this quick point, I'm running out of time. Wait, weren't there psukim in favor of this idea? How can he claim it's the Rabbanan? Think about where the psukim were from. And the other sugyan, sukkah daf lachav tet daf lamed, where were the psukim from? Ah, very good, Andrew Wolf. Micha and Yeshayahu. Even if you love Nach, and I do love Nach, one by one say, but sources from Nevi'im still are not Doraita. If a din is derived from prophets, it's still Drabanan, not Doraita. So if Mitzvah Baver comes from Micha and Yeshayahu, it's a Drabanan concept. So maybe the advantage of the Sukkah source is that now we can raise the Psul to Doraita. Okay, that's number one. Number two, let's go to the Ritva. Okay, and then we'll get to one last thing. In the Ritva. Here you go, guys. Okay, That is a great theory. What did the Ritva just quote in the name of Tosfot? That we do restrict mitzvah by avera. What are we restricted to? Remember we had the idea before of restricting it to karbanot? Now we thought till now that if you extend it to lulav, you're not restricting it to karbanot. What did the Ritva just do? What if I could claim that lulav somehow has a carbon-like aspect to it, has a worship-like aspect to it, in a way that makes it more like carbon than sukkah? What would emerge? I could apply mitzvah b'avera to lulav. I couldn't apply mitzvah b'avera to sukkah. Now, this is the second to last svara, guys. We get to the last svara in 1 second. Can anyone tell me why lulav might have a carbon-like aspect to it? What is it about lulav that would make it a little bit more carbon-like than sukkah? Okay, see, it's easy to say, but can you come up with any rationale for such a thing? What makes lulav a bit carbon-like? Oh, I think we've stumped everybody here. Well, let's start as follows. What kind? If I had to find one mitzvah in general that seems to have carbon-like elements to it, what mitzvah do we usually associate with? Tefillah, very good. Okay, I was going to say, right, Edison? Okay, prayer. Okay, tefillah. Okay, so maybe tefillah has carbon-like elements to it. Okay, how could I now, yes, lulav? What could I do with lulav? Isn't lulav used during prayer? I used lulav during hallel. Now, I'm going to be a little bit extreme for a second, guys. Would you ever imagine that I would eat matzah in the middle of hallel? Oh, let's integrate matzah in there. Every Pesach, hallel comes, it'd be great. After the first paragraph, pass around the matzah. Right? Maybe we'll make it better, we'll make matzah pizza. Right? It'll just be very exciting. One of the staples of good Pesach. Right, you're good to go here. No, we would never do such a thing. Why would we never do such a thing? Because matzah has nothing to do with tefillah. It cannot be integrated. But if I shake a lulav in the middle of hallel, that should tell you that. Even though I don't know why, there's something about lulav that engenders the praise of God, the singing to God. So maybe lulav has a tefillah-like aspect. It is a karban. So again, so now we have a second reason why mitzvah would not apply to sukkah. Maybe because it doesn't have that karban-like quality. John? Very good. So that was very clever. So John Seidel is an excellent fellow here, guys. Okay, John just pointed out, if this is true, it probably should apply to shofar. I would say even to shofar in a more profound way. Let's just think for a second, guys. First of all, based on my criteria, how do I know lulav is connected to tefillah? Because we integrate it. What would emerge with shofar? We also integrate shofar. Here I'll say one thing. This is for all the Sephardim room, guys. Okay, every once in a while, I'd like to be Sephardi. It happens occasionally. Okay, so one, I'll give you two examples where I'd like to be Sephardi. One is during Seder night, when you guys act it out. We Ashkenazim are so boring, we just talk about it, we don't act it out. Okay, that is one time. Okay, but secondly, some of you may know this, actually, some of you may know this even from Nusach Sephardi. See, saying who's used to this. What does many Nusach Ashkenaz do during Nusach Rosh Hashanah? They blow shofar, but only during the Chazan's repetition. Right? But, very good. But if you daven Sephardi, you blow shofar during the private Amidah. Okay, who here grew up with that? Cheers. Who grew up with that? We're blowing shofar during the private Amidah? Ezra Dayan, there you go. And Jakey, that's it? Wait, Ezra Troy, why do you guys do that? What? Oh, you daven Chabad? Wait, where do you live? How come you don't go to KMS? All right, whoa, okay. That's fine. Yeah. Right, I didn't realize the Troys are the secret Chabad next to Yeshiva. Cool. Wow. Ezra, your whole childhood, you daven Chabad? He's the only Yom Naram goes Chabad. What?
He's off the derby. Yes. Wait,
okay. Is the Chabad off our kola? Where's the Chabad?
Yeah, it's
off Lovejoy. I never saw it. All right. Next time I'm there, I'll go to I'll go to Ben Yehuda and then go to Chabad. Okay, so in any case. So I've always been curious to see that, because it's very interesting to me. Like, you're in the middle, imagine that, guys. It's very foreign to us. You're in the middle of the private Amidah, but you're kind of all trying to coordinate and get to Tkiyat Shofar together, even though you're in the middle of your private Amidah. We are not used to that, but again, Nusachari does do it, and Sephardim did do it. Okay, but in any case, okay, this is great news for me. Okay, now it's like you're only a Chabadnik on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. The rest of the year, you're just a regular Modern Orthodox guy. Okay, so in any case... So John Seidel's right. You'd think at that point, what would emerge? Shofar is clearly an act of carbon, tefillah. I even go one step further. Okay, you probably heard a lot of different Torah about this. Some people might say that shofar is the greatest expression of prayer. Because what is, I raise it for cool this guy, but what's the limitation of prayer? You're limited by words, right? And if you're really a chassid, right, Jeremy, you'll say, what would be the greatest prayer? It could transcend language, right? Language, by definition, is limited. Right? No language. Think about it, guys, when we try to describe an experience, we almost might invariably feel language does never really capture the experience. And if you want to capture the experience, you need to somehow transcend language. So one idea might be, shofar is this act of transcending language. And it might be the ultimate prayer in that sense. So John Seidel, I like your sfera very much. We have shofar as the ultimate prayer, and therefore the same logic should apply. Now, guys, yeah.
He admits it, though.
What?
I'm
not saying the mitzvah said it, but I do think you have a good point. If you're going to say the sfera for lulav, it is extremely tempting to say the same sfera for shofar. Now, guys, I'm having, yeah.
Probably maybe another reason for shofar is that not only is it for tefillah, but for teshuvas.
Okay, fair enough. Now, guys, since you guys have been great and I don't go overboard, I'm going to skip the Minchas Chinuch. Okay, everyone's curious, come over to me, I'll tell you what Minchas Chinuch says. Should I tell you very briefly?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Yeah. You know what? Maybe I'll skip the review. I normally do a review. So I apologize, guys. Everyone should review it themselves in their head. Actually, I'm going to do a review now for 30 seconds. We're still going to finish at 101. Okay, here's the 30 second review. Ready, guys? Why does Shmuel think it's okay days 2 through 7? 1, he rejects Mitzvah of Avera. 2, it doesn't apply to the Rabbanans. 3, it doesn't apply to Zechel and Mikdash. 4, it doesn't apply outside the world of Karbanot. 4 approaches to Shmuel. Next, what is Mitzvah Bavera? 2 major theories. The causality theory. Only when an A causes B. The tainted object theory. Ask Ishai, you'll discover it's a classic Hefzik Gavra split. Okay, last part. Okay, why do I need a special pasuk to invalidate the stolen sukkah? Isn't it just standard Mitzvah Bavera? Okay, theory 1 of the Tosfot. Mitzvah is only a rabbinic problem. If there's a drasha, it's a biblical problem. Theory 2 of the Ritva. Mitzvah bear only applies to karbon and lulav, but karbon and lulav, but not sukkah. Okay, last theory. The Minchas Chinuch has a great thing, guys. I'm sorry, I can't explain who he is. This is 1 o'clock already, and I promise I finish at 1:01. The Minchas Chinuch says there's some mitzvot that you have to do, and other mitzvot that you either could be chayv or not, but it's up to you. We all have to take a lulav. We don't all have to wear tzitzit. What would be a way of avoiding the mitzvah?
Not wearing
just don't have 4 garments. Just have a 4-cornered garment. How does this play in the world of sukkah? Guys, let's say it's Chol HaMoed, 3rd day of Chol HaMoed. Do I have to eat in a sukkah?
No.
No, what's my way of avoiding it?
Don't eat.
Mizonah Ramotzi. What if I just chicken? I eat just chicken and potatoes all day. Right? I am in great shape and I don't have to go to a sukkah. When's the one time? Sounds like Pesach, right? Yeah, when's the one time it's not true? When's the one time it's Sukkot that's not true?
The first night.
Okay, so the first night's a chiyuv, the rest is just an option. Yeah. Says the Minchas Chinuch, what would happen if I would eat in a stolen sukkah on day 3?
Ooh. Ooh.
Now, can I be yotzei the mitzvah? No, because it's
mitzvah
b'avera. But what did I eat? What if I ate a huge steak sandwich? So is it just mitzvah b'avera? Is it just I'm not yotzei? Or would you say I ate meat, ate bread outside the sukkah, which would not just be a lack of mitzvah, it would be a concrete violation. What does Minchas Chinuch say? If the problem would only be mitzvah b'avera, the problem would only be the lack of mitzvah. What does the pasuk come and tell you? It's not just a lack of mitzvah, a stolen sukkah is not a sukkah. And at that point, it's like I ate outside the sukkah. All right, everybody have a great job.
You're welcome.
You can't just shut the recorder.